Larry Weber, our host for Backyard Almanac, joins us this morning. Howdy there, Sunshine.
Yeah, good morning, good morning. You know, Lisa, it is really hard to believe when you look around right now that we spoke a week ago, and at that time there was ice over all the lakes and all the ponds and still some snow on the ground. It's a little hard to believe that right now because we had quite a week. I always told my students when I was teaching that April is the thawing month, and most years, yes, we do get ice out and thawing and so forth happening with the ponds. We get that in April, but we get it quite dramatically this week. It was pretty amazing. I have a series of ponds, about 10 of them, that I keep an eye on every spring, and all but one of them lost all of its ice. One of them is about half ice, but all the rest of them are open, and that is really, really amazing that it happened that fast. I predicted it would happen by the 10th. Well, it beat me. It got a little quicker than that. The first week of April, unlike the early parts of January, February, and March, all three of those, we began the months colder than normal. The first week of April has been considerably warmer than normal. And these days of clear skies and chilly nights are just amazing. We are also having wind. We've had wind from the east and from the north, which makes it feel colder. But it also does something else. There's a statistic that I haven't mentioned, and that is precipitation. We haven't got much. We did get a rain last Sunday, but that was about it. And with this wind, there is a drying, and as I said once before, among other things, April can be the time of grass fires. So some of us will be very glad to see the rain coming this next Sunday. And like you say, tomorrow's forecast is amazing. I hope you've had a chance also to get out after dark. We are having right now a big, bright, waxing gibbous moon headed toward the full moon of April 11. It's just been a beautiful way to end the day. The sunsets have been spectacular as well. We now have days that are more than 13 hours long, and we're headed towards sunsets in another week or two of about 10 days. We're headed towards sunsets that are about 8 o'clock. Now, to put things in perspective, you said that it is getting a little bit cooler, and we tend to forget rather rapidly, but last year, this is really a hard statistic to believe, but look it up if you don't believe me, but last year, on April 9, the Weather Service in Duluth recorded 2 above 0 for a low. That was a record-setting temperature. So it lets us know things can still happen. And anybody who has spent April here knows that it's not unusual to get snow. I want to talk for a little bit about these vernal ponds that show up. When the ice on them melts and when the snow nearby melts, they create a little pond. Many of these vernal ponds, these springtime ponds, are temporary. They do not last throughout the rest of the summer. They usually dry up during the summer. Some of them are permanent, but nevertheless, they are usually small, usually not that deep, but very valuable. They have a large number of critters that live in places like this. Probably the best known of them is the frogs. And anytime there's vernal ponds opening up, I'm always out there trying to hear the frogs calling. And yesterday at one of the ponds I stopped at, yes, I did hear the first frog. It was a wood frog calling. The wood frogs make a glunk, 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 glunk kind of noise, and it's even too easy to confuse it with a duck. But they are out there, one of the first ones. They will be joined soon by chorus frogs and spring peepers. So this is always a condition of April. I always expect it to happen somewhere towards the middle of the month. And yes, it's happening. Another thing of note this week, I have been, during my walks every day all winter, I have been going by a swamp that had a beaver lodge in it. The beaver lodge had a cache of food, sticks and twigs and so forth, nearby. And I always felt that it looked like it wasn't enough to last all winter. And sure enough, about a month ago, maybe late February, the beaver used its teeth to gnaw a hole through the ice and came up on shore and cut a few twigs and so forth and pulled them down. And then about 2 weeks later, it did it again. And so, yes, its food supply did run out, and it pulled all these extra foods back down in for the rest of the winter. Well, the ice melted, and sure enough, I saw the beaver out swimming yesterday, and it looked very healthy. So it looked like getting that little extra snack allowed it to survive the rest of the winter. We are getting migrants now that have come in and starting to sing. Robins and song sparrows and red-winged blackbirds, grackles, mourning doves, they are all singing now, besides just showing up there singing. I've had juncos in the yard for a while, and then 2 days ago I had a fox sparrow right nearby. The fox sparrow is a little bit larger than many of the other sparrows, and also more of a reddish brown. That's why it's called a fox sparrow. And they're always neat to see. They come by, they nest in the far north. They come by every spring. They last maybe 2 weeks, and then they take off and go further north. And they're always a great critter to see in the yard. The finches that were so terrific, especially the second half of the winter, are virtually gone. There's a few pine siskins and maybe one or two purple finches still hanging around, but otherwise they moved on. The woodcocks and the ruffed grouse and the turkey are all still displaying. The woodpeckers are drumming loud every morning. Yesterday, I saw both a bald eagle and an American kestrel. They're both migrants. And then in the open waters that have shown up, Canada geese, trumpeter swans I've seen. I've seen red ring-necked ducks, mallards, and yesterday also hooded mergansers. But the big surprise happened this morning and during my walk when I found a kingfisher. Kingfisher is a type of usually classified as a songbird. However, it does live on fish and hangs around water. And, of course, it's got to have open water if it's going to survive. But it was great to see that. In the other world, we have things going on like dandelions and crocuses in bloom. Among other things, the month of April, I always think, is known as the catkin month or the tree flowering month. You know, they're not big blossoms, but they are out there flowering. Maybe the most obvious around Duluth right now is the silver maples. Silver maples are really fabulously in bloom right now. Usually the tree is either male or female, and the male ones bloom first, and I saw a lot of those this week. The female trees are a little bit later. They'll be followed by the red maple, which has a similar type of flower. Catkins of the alders are nice and ripe right now. Catkins of hazel are developing, and way back last month when we saw the aspen and pussy willow buds, they are developing now into catkins as well. So there's a tremendous amount going on. And yeah, in these clear, sunny days, I've been seeing butterflies virtually every day. They're usually the ones that have hibernated for the winter. The milbert tortoiseshell and mourning cloaks are the two that I've been seeing. So a tremendous amount going on. I was in Duluth yesterday, and I was a little surprised to see the Bagley Pond was still covered with ice. So here's an example where the lake is impacting and slowing down the phenology of Duluth versus what we have here. So anyway, get out and enjoy it. It's going to be a terrific couple of days, so take care.
Larry, I've got one question for you before I let you go. We had a conversation earlier with the Minnesota DNR, and they are conducting their frog and toad calling survey over the weekend.
Exactly.
And there are actually a couple of routes available up in our area, and I'm wondering, and I did tell the lady, by the way, I said, we have a local naturalist up here that can make all of those frog calls. And she thought that was like way cool. She said, I can't make frog calls. So I just wondered if this is something that you are either taking part in or if you've ever taken part in this in years past.
I have been part of it since its inception. I go way back more than 20 years of doing a frog and toad survey. Matter of fact, when I did it, it was pretty much done from scratch. I think I started it before the DNR started it. I see a real value in it. We need to know about our frogs and toads, how healthy they are, and this is a way to tell it. It's not only done now, it's done three times. The early spring frogs, their survey is done in April. It's too early to do it now, and from the looks of things, I'd say we'd have to wait at least another week before we can do the survey. And then there's another one done in later spring. That's usually done toward the end of May. And then there's a third one that is done, I usually shoot for about the end of June for that, for the summer frogs. Now, we have seven species of frogs and one type of toad that live and breed in our area. And of these eight, every one of them makes a call that is distinct from the other one, so it's quite easy to get to know them. Now, the way the survey is done, unlike bird surveys where we go out and maybe actually see and hear and see the bird, we don't do that with the frog and toad. It's only hearing. And then you have an index, one, two, or three. If you hear just a couple of them, you give it a one. If you hear more than that, you give it a two. And if you hear just a great deal, a large amount of them, you give it a three. And the surveys are done in the evening. You visit various sites. I like to visit about 10 of them. It's on a route of about 20 miles. And you stop at each one. They want you to stop for about 3 minutes. I find that, you know, depending on traffic and so forth, 3 minutes, it doesn't always work. But still, you can stop and record what you have there. And so, yes, that is the frog survey. And you have to contact the DNR about what routes are still available. It is a really important thing, I believe, that we should all know how our frogs and toads are doing. And this is one method to find that out.
Well, we've got the information up on our website, and there's a place that you can click. Of course, now the DNR has got some cool things added. They've got a map. You can sign up online. They have actually developed an app so that some of the people are going to be trying out an app. They'll be able to send their data right into the DNR. And so they've got a library there, and the app apparently has it too, of the actual frog calls so that you can, you know, kind of practice before you go and learn. But it's no substitute for Larry Weber imitating the frogs on KUMD.
Well, I might mention that the frogs and toads vary throughout the state, and I just mentioned what we had here in the northeast part of the state. In the rest of the state, there is quite a few other ones. And so the calls would sound quite differently. And, yeah, it is good to get into a library that check all the calls of all throughout the state. But I just do my survey in the northeast.
Well, you're a famous guy, Larry. Just wanted to give you a little heads up on that. Larry, thanks
okay,
so much for
one.
Joining us. You betcha. Larry Weber this morning, the host of Backyard Almanac, a regular feature of Fridays right here on KUMD.